Greetings from the studio at the BobDavisPodcasts.com. This is podcast 514, The New Talk. This is, Friday in podcast time, and this is when I take the radio show, my syndicated radio show, the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show, and put it up on the podcast page for you guys to hear in case you don't have access to the radio. It airs at 4 p.m. at 1280 The Patriot in Minneapolis and St. Paul. As we get new affiliates, I'll let you know. It's kind of weird because it's kind of the high point of my week, because the radio show is both a review of what I talked about during the week. Of course, parts of the podcast are telescoped into segments of the radio show. And there's original content in it that haven't been in the podcast. So I love posting this on my page. So this is a big, big thing for me. So we're going to get started with segment one of the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. So I'm in the studio and in my studio, and I come down here to drink my coffee, and I make the coffee in the morning, and I go out on the deck, and I was like, wow, it's actually hot and humid, and we're into summer now. The calendar beginning of summer is coming up, and that means heat and humidity and storms, with high winds and water damage and hail damage and damage to the exterior of your home. And with the storms and storm damage will be people knocking at your door. They're going to tell you that they can give you a great deal on storm damage repair, and then you think, you know, these people don't look like they're from around here. I don't know them. Because the other thing that will happen is they will often demand partial or full payment for the work up front, and then they just disappear, or they do really shoddy work. And what do? You don't have any recourse. Well, what you do to begin with is you call a name you know. So if you have storm damage to the exterior of your home or to the roof, you call Cairo Contracting, 612-702-2357. Ed Cairo grew up in St. Paul and Bloomington. Ed Cairo Contracting is a Better Business Bureau accredited business. So because Ed Cairo is a local guy, you know he's not going anywhere. Residential and commercial roofing, siding, gutters, and window repair and installation. And yeah, Cairo Contracting are storm damage specialists. And a good example is hail. Hail can damage your shingles so that layer by layer they begin to deteriorate and you get leaks. So it's something that you have to get addressed if you have had this kind of damage. A tree fell during a storm a few years ago here at my place, and we were shocked at the damage that it did. I mean, it was a big tree, but it was amazing the complexity of dealing with the damage in the aftermath. For 15 years, Cairo Contracting has been around residential and business exterior remodeling experts and storm damage specialists. The name you know when it comes to storm damage repair and exterior remodeling, residential and commercial, Cairo Contracting, 612-702-2357. That's 612-702-2357. If you need those numbers, you can click on the banner at the top of the Bob Davis podcast page, and it will, you know, you can get the numbers. Cairo Contracting. And thanks, Ed, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. All right, here is segment one of this week's Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. Welcome to the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. To hear all the Bob Davis podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcasts.com. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. Again, since this show moves around a lot on the radio stations that we have as affiliates, sometimes you'll get used to hearing it in one location and it will move. And I have to say this at the beginning of every show. That's great because that means radio stations are using it for what they need to use it for, which is it's an hour-long show with a lot of original content from my podcast. And for this show, and it can be moved around depending on what kind of programming radio station has on the weekend. So thanks again for finding this show, the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. This is the show with the mission of bringing content from my podcasts back to the radio. And that is where we're going to start for this week's Bob Davis Podcast radio show, episode 31. One of the things I've learned podcasting is And I often say this, that podcasts are very content rich. Podcasting in general results in very content rich programming. It came as a bit of a surprise to me. Radio is a mass medium with a specific format. And as I learned about podcast, I was a little surprised to realize how much content podcasters generate and how little of it you can get on the radio. And it's not because somebody doesn't like podcasts necessarily. It's due to the hour-long break structure of radio as opposed to digital. And it's because radio is a different kind of medium. A great example this week in my podcasts, in addition to the Orlando terror attack, which we are going to talk about in this show, I did an hour-long podcast. And it was an hour-long podcast. Didn't intend to be an hour-long podcast, but it ended up being an hour-long that I did something I never do. And that was I decided I was going to give some advice to people who were thinking about starting a podcast or who were doing a podcast, because there's a big convention of radio broadcasters and they're going to be telling podcasters how to do what they do. And this really kicked off. It triggered a lot of stuff with me. And, you know, just to tell you, there are over 100,000 podcasters out there, and it's growing every week. And suddenly, radio has become very interested in podcasting after putting it down for years, because more and more people are listening to podcasts. I think over a quarter of the population listens to podcasts now, and it's probably cutting into radio's audience. But the other thing is, radio companies are struggling to find content providers, and there's a lot of them in podcasting. So that's the genesis of this. And in reviewing that podcast for this show, I was like, well, there's a ton of stuff in there about podcasts. And I thought, for this radio show, I don't need to have all that. I edited a lot of stuff about podcasts out. But what I tried to do was leave the insights that really apply to all kinds of business and how life in so-called corporate America compares to life as an independent entrepreneur. So in the final segment of this show today, there's a whole lot of talk about the creative impulse with some great examples from music and the movies, because I watch all these documentaries about movies and about musicians on Netflix, the Eagles documentary and the Tom Petty stuff and the Janis Joplin documentary. And then I always listen to the director tracks on the movies that I really like. So that just kind of fuels my creative juices and gets me thinking. And the reality is a lot of that stuff really does apply to what a lot of us have gone through and are going through in corporate America and in business these last few years, and what the world could potentially look like in a few more years, especially, and then you've heard me talk, if you listen to this show, about technology, especially if we learn to really use technology to amplify individuals and to build individual businesses and to really supercharge our entrepreneurial senses and our creativity. Because if I've learned anything doing what I'm doing now, if you're truly creative and independent, you probably don't do organizations very well. If you're truly creative and independent and a maverick and a troublemaker like myself, you really organizations don't do you very well. Some people are great in organizations, and that's great, and organizations need those kinds of people. But my experience working within an organization, in other words, working for someone, has not been very good. So we're going to talk about that later in the show. And I always try to inspire people to start their own businesses and to strike out on their own creative highways or back roads or pathways, because I think it really is a big piece of personal salvation, is finding what really makes you happy and being able to do it. And today we have the tools that we never had before to make that possible. So we'll talk about that in the final segment of today's show. Well, this was a tough week. And one of the reasons I started out this show talking about something near and dear to my heart, and it makes us feel good to talk about creativity, it makes me feel good to talk about personal creativity and opportunity and new ideas, because this was not a happy week. We have very, very heavy energy because the week kicked off with a terror attack. That's how I describe it, because that's what it was, on an Orlando gay nightclub early last Sunday morning. And I have to say that this is one of those times when not having to do a daily radio show was actually a blessing, because I would have hated to be the guy sitting in the chair doling out facts such as they are, and I hesitate to use the word facts, as they come in from these terrible things that happen, and then have to engage in nothing more than rife speculation about what it all means. We will talk about some of this stuff in the next half hour, because one of the things that's very interesting to me is that I predicted, and it happened this way, that the whole process of coverage and politics surrounding this story, the Orlando terror attack, has been on a very predictable path. And I'm going to talk about that in this show for two segments, because I think it's worth talking about a little bit more in depth than perhaps you have heard so far. And the reality is, so far, not a damn thing has been done to make people safer or to address the problem, because nobody can agree on what needs to be done. And for that reason, as you'll hear, I don't think much will be done. One of the things I found actually amusing this week, if you'll permit me to say that in relation to the story of the Orlando terror attack, is the number of self-professed gay Americans who are usually on the left in this country, who have purchased guns this week and who are arming themselves in an effort to be protected. I find that amusing and encouraging, because what so-called conservative would have ever believed that the Second Amendment just gained perhaps thousands, even hundreds of thousands of passionate defenders before what happened in Orlando? So it kind of will pull you back from thinking about all of the fighting that's gone on behind and with so-called right-wing conservatives and left-wing gay rights advocates, when here's an example of the cross currents in this country that come because of the changes that we're going through, and how here you have allies that would perhaps never be allies. Meanwhile, we are no closer to coming up with a plan to address the threat that John McCain talked about this week when he said the Orlando attacks are directly attributable to President Obama's policy because of this administration's precipitous withdrawal from Iraq. And while I do not find myself agreeing with the Arizona senator and former presidential candidate, I think his comments are factually correct, since most people don't realize the origins of ISIS. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit in this the show. Does the term radical Islam accurately describe the threat posed by ISIL? Well, we'll find out, and we'll talk about it. While some politicians are making hay decrying the inability of the president to use the term radical Islam to the extent that the president this week had to strike back, does the term actually describe the threat? Coming up, what's going to be done about the threat of so-called lone wolf terror attacks in the United States? Nothing. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. To hear more of the Bob Davis Podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts Radio Show. All right, back in the studio just ahead of segment two. You know, I talk a lot about yoga, and I love yoga. I do it all the time. I'm crazy about it, actually. I often say my job is doing yoga, even though I do podcasts. But one of the things that makes it great is this stuff that I drink called Hydrus. And it's not a drink that you get in a bottle that's 100% Hydrus. You dilute Hydrus in 16.7 ounces of water or whatever, and it hydrates you. It uses new technology to get critical electrolytes into your muscles with unrivaled speed and effectiveness. There's no sugar in it. Tennis players are using it. CrossFit athletes are using it. Cycling athletes are using it. People who play hockey in adult leagues are practicing and using Hydrus, yoga, whatever. And the thing is, it really makes a huge difference in being able to practice at your edge, because when you're in crowded rooms where it's over 100 degrees, there's a lot of humidity. If you're dehydrated, you'll have all kinds of problems. And believe it or not, people don't even realize that they're dehydrated. And this is the huge thing about this. They get headaches, they fatigue quickly, the next day they're sore. And these things all happened to me until I started using Hydrus. And I was like shocked at the difference it made in my practice. So it doesn't matter whether you cycle, do CrossFit, lift, or do competitive sports. In the future here, I'll be telling you some crazy stories that people have, the almost testimonials about what it's done. Hydrus will help you take it to the edge, and that's where you really get better at whatever it is that you enjoy doing practice-wise, whether it's yoga or CrossFit or cycling or whatever. Join the performance hydration revolution. Here's what you do. Visit HydrusPerformance.com. That's HYDRUS, HydrusPerformance.com, HydrusPerformance.com, or you can click on the Hydrus banner at the top of the Bob Davis Podcasts.com page. That'll take you to Hydrus. Lots of content that explains how to use it, what it is, how to get it. You can buy it right from the page. HydrusPerformance.com. All right, here is segment two of this week's Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. Listening to the Bob Davis Podcast radio show. For more of the Bob Davis Podcasts, visit the BobDavisPodcasts.com. For more of this show, visit GCNLive.com. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. Welcome back. From coverage of last week's Orlando terror attack to the political wrangling, the filibusters, the calls for action, the blaming and the recrimination, probably even down to the conversations and arguments you're having with friends or over the back fence, this is all taking a very predictable track. And it started last Sunday morning with media coverage of the attack. They call everybody in on a Sunday morning, and everybody tries to cover the thing and get facts out as quickly as possible, as though everyone is sitting on the edge of their seat. And if you do television, what you do is you sit there while somebody cobbles together B-roll, and it's the pictures of the cops, you know, milling around outside, and the SWAT team, and everything else, you know, coupled with the grieving victims, people with blood on them, etc., etc. The whole sordid scene that rolls consistently over, you know, voices and people talking and experts being brought in via satellite and everything else. And I, you know, it's a stream of facts which, if you go online, you can learn within 5 minutes, and you don't have to subject yourself to that constant drub of outrage or sadness or whatever. What will be done about it? Well, that's an interesting question, and I think that's probably the key question, because the reality is nothing is going to be done about it more than what has been done about it for years. Other than the fact that horrific and terrible are now new words in the American media lexicon, and everyone else seems to have become numb to this sort of thing. We will forget about this in a month or two, and it will not enter our minds, to be quite honest, until the next thing happens. What do you want done? Do you want to send 500,000 troops to the Middle East? Where do you want to send them? What do you want them to do once they get there? What can be done? Well, I'll give you my honest reaction. We can certainly apply immigration law, and if at the very least slow down immigration, and especially concentrate on southern borders where they're porous, and stop bringing people in who may potentially be problems both immediately and in the long term, second generation. Both President Obama and Hillary Clinton, however, will increase the number of Middle Eastern immigrants or refugees to the U.S. This shooter's parents were from Afghanistan. I don't know if it means anything. His father was a supporter of Taliban and was probably just as crazy as the kid, because he went around telling people he was the president of Afghanistan. We can pass more stringent gun controls, such as waiting periods and so forth. That would, of course, probably mean people like this guy, Omar, would just wait longer to get his guns, and then the same thing would happen. And by the way, It's important to point out that gun control laws didn't stop the Paris shootings and did not stop the massacre in Norway a few years ago. I would think this kind of thing is going to motivate Americans to arm themselves for protection. I have friends who actually are diehard liberals who have become gun owners for just this reason. And it still leaves the question, do what? And the answer is, no one seems to know. Because every time you bring up solutions, they tend to fall apart in the discourse. And I suppose that's a good thing because I guess maybe that's how we vet solutions. But everybody's got a list of things that they think should be done right now to solve this problem. And as you work your way down the list, you know, whatever your list is, you realize that your, quote, solution starts to kind of slip away once you start to actually objectively vet your solution. We need to close the borders. We need to, you know, get guns away from people. We need to send troops to the Middle East. We need to, because that's what this guy says. And then when you start asking questions, it starts to fade away. I used to say, what would you have them do? To callers. And people would start off with their radical solution to something, and we would just start asking questions. And then a short time later, it would just kind of devolve into, all right, I'll talk to you later. And the reality is that in the next few days, and this is why I hate kind of talking about this stuff, because there's going to be a firestorm of that sort of thing. Reaction, debate, reaction, debate, reaction, debate. People are going to fire off comments on Twitter. They already have Facebook, Reddit. There'll be lots of memes. Many of them will be deleted, or whole content and comment sections will be deleted. Actually, Reddit's already been doing that for fear of alienating whole groups. Some are going to condemn gays. Some are going to condemn so-called radical Islam. Some are going to condemn guns. Everybody is going to be demanding that something be done. Some will condemn immigration and so forth. The reality is, if you actually ask yourself honestly, well, how do you fight this? Without spying on citizens, without taking guns away, without invading some foreign country in force, how do you fight this if you don't want to lock down the borders and just stop anybody from coming here who isn't, how do you say it? What? Ethnically American? What's that? There is no such thing. Do they have to be white and Christian only? What about Jewish people? What about Africans? What about, I don't know, Europeans? And that's the reality of the tactic of terror and how it works. It is a weapon system which is designed to break down resistance and force responses out of anger, which then fuel more attacks and suck you into quicksand. Because the reality is there's 350 million people in America, 50 people are dead, 100 people are maimed or wounded, maybe more will die, out of 350 million. There's no collateral damage in Orlando. This is not to minimize what happened, but to put it in perspective. This kind of a thing really, it creates this traumatizing effect on the body politic. It thrives on creating friction between groups that might normally be united or about to be united. It prevents action and turns the target onto itself, which is exactly what is happening in this country as it pertains to gays, radical Islam, guns, surveillance, overbearing police power, and so forth. And free countries are easy targets because we allow the reaction. We have to allow the reaction. We have to allow the discourse, as we did during the Vietnam War. And now we know from the KGB files, for example, that the North Vietnamese were actively operating politically in this country during the Vietnam War to sow confusion and discourse. That's exactly what, quote-unquote, ISIS is doing, or whoever today's enemy is. And we have to allow the discourse, and we have to allow citizens to have their constitutional rights, I guess, because if we don't, then what are we, right? What do we stand for at that point? Coming up, so you think failure to call the terror threat radical Islam is the culprit in all of this? Maybe it is, and maybe it ain't. Next. For more of the Bob Davis Podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcasts.com. For more of this show, visit gcnlive.com. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. We'll be right back. All right, just ahead of segment three for this week's Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show, live from the studio. If you're a pilot and you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, and I've been talking about this, and there's a lot of pilots that say, why do I need this? You know, because it helps to have a visual indicator of your angle of attack when you turn on final approach, and this is where Alpha saves lives. Alpha Systems makes the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. They started the angle of attack revolution, and now it's in government planes, and it's in all sorts of aircraft, and they want to get it into your plane's package today. The bottom line is Alpha Systems AOA saves lives. It's FAA approved. Click on the Alpha Systems banners for more info about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator at thebobdavispodcast.com. Alpha has been the digital sponsor of the Bob Davis Podcast for a while, and I really appreciate it. So check them out. All right, here is segment three of this week's Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show, which airs Sunday now at 4 p.m. on 1280 The Patriot in Minneapolis and St. Paul. And as I get new affiliates, I will let you guys know. You're hearing the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. For more of the Bob Davis Podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcasts.com. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts Radio Show. Welcome back. Big political fight this week. Donald Trump and Ted Cruz and many Republicans say the problem is the president won't define the enemy of the United States as radical Islam, especially when it comes to ISIL or ISIS. The president was forced this week to strike back because Donald Trump castigated his administration for failing to call it what it is, radical Islam. But what if the president is right on this one? One of the reasons the president has decided not to use that term is not because I think, you know, he's a secret Muslim, but because it's the realization, if you actually look at the information, that ISIS is actually made up of former high-ranking officers, Sunnis, who may not even be that religious, who were iced out of the new Iraqi government by Shiites after the war. This is a cultural conflict within parts of the Middle East. It's a tribal conflict, and they are using some form of radicalization in order to control the people that are underneath them. And the fact is, we brought the Sunnis in during the awakening to defeat the terror movement in Iraq when we were occupying the country. And then after the United States withdrew, they were pushed out by the Shiite government of Iraq. And de-Ba'athification didn't help either in that situation. So this group of officers created ISIS. Is it religious? Is it a religious group? Well, the intelligence really isn't clear on whether it's a religious group. It really isn't clear on whether the leaders are religious. There are certainly figureheads who appear to be religious. But that's an easy explanation, I think. In any case, let me tell you, nobody's going to reinvade Iraq to solve this problem and eliminate ISIL or ISIS or anything else. These are tribal conflicts, or they are international conflicts germane to the Middle East. As far as attacks going on in this country, it's because supposedly their view of it is we're getting involved and we're there. And so therefore, because we're doing drone strikes and things in order to control the situation, this is why it's happening. Well, that's debatable, too. So, I'm not saying that that's what's going on. I'm saying this is part of the problem with debating this, because there's so many pieces of it. So what, again, is going to happen? Well, first of all, nothing is going to be done. As I said before, we are going to forget this as we have forgotten all the other attacks, and we will also forget the recriminations and demands for change that will come in the wake of this attack. Second, nobody knows what to do. Nobody knows how to proceed. And since we're having an election in a few months, the powers that be are going to leave any intervention to the next president and Congress to deal with. Third, developing a strategy that works, and not drone strikes and not invading every country everywhere at enormous cost, is going to take some time. And it will take some time then, once a strategy is developed in the institutions of our government, Defense Department, State Department, White House, blah, 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 blah. It's going to take some time to sell that to the American public, which is going to be, as it always is, fickle and divided on this issue, as they will be and have been for the history of the nation on every major issue at every major turning point in our history. So what's going to happen? Well, this kind of stuff is going to continue until someone does something really stupid and horrific, as if this kind of a thing isn't stupid and horrific enough. When that happens, whatever that is, and whenever it happens, there will be a really big response. And I don't think that we will ever be the same as the result. The fact that you can add Orlando now to the tag of stories along with San Bernardino and all the rest of them. Miniature Pearl Harbors that nobody can really do anything about. They can't protect us. They won't protect us, really, because what are they going to do? How do they protect us? So when this big mistake happens, and, you know, fill in the blank, because I'm not going to sit here and, you know, from my advanced and high position, you know, in my basement, talking into a microphone, I'm not going to tell you what's going to happen and what big mistake is going to occur. I just think that there will be a huge mistake or miscalculation, and it could occur on either side. And that's all going to be, you know, the whole thing is just going to throw the baby out with the bathwater, literally. And then there will be a typically American overreaction to this. And I think personally, ISIS, Iraq, the whole Middle East ought to fear that moment when the United States overreacts. Because when we overreact, it's generally not good. And don't be so quick, by the way, to think that a President Trump is going to be any more likely to foment that kind of response than a President Clinton. You might be surprised to see a President Clinton invading Iraq or Syria or someplace. You know, I've done a lot of podcasts about foreign policy. I tend to think, my personal opinion is, that you kind of have to work around the edges and try to find some place for that you can have a victory, a decisive victory against a shadowy enemy that kind of tamps them down or scares them off. But I don't know how that gets done today. I think it might have been, you know, what did Reagan do? He withdrew the troops from Lebanon after the terror attack that killed 200-some Marines back in the day. That's what he did. How did Reagan handle the hostage crisis? He made an arms deal with Iran, which is, you know, with all due respect, it was junk parts and things of that nature so they could keep some of their Phantoms and C-130s flying. But, you know, the arms for deal thing turned into a huge scandal. So, you know, this is what we did. We actually pulled back. But this is how these kinds of things happens. You know, sooner or later, somebody takes the bull by the horns, positive or negative, and tries to deal with it in some way, shape, or form. And then you're on to the next thing and moving down the road. The question really is whether ISIS or some other enemy is going to miscalculate, or the United States. The immediate danger is that there's a lot of these people who are going to be, quote, unquote, lone wolves, when they're really not lone wolves. They're being mentally controlled. And why are they doing it? Because they're idiots. You know, they're not very smart, or they're mentally weak, because the smart and mentally strong terrorists end up being commanders. They're not the ones that strap the suicide vests. They send the idiots out with the suicide vests. And that's what's going to go on here. The fact is, what I fear personally is a group of these people and a New Delhi-style attack in a place like New York City or a mall or something to that effect. Because at that point, there's so much firepower, you know, somebody with a sidearm is not going to be able to do anything. Coming up, we're going to change the energy a little bit. We're going to talk about something that is near and dear to my heart, and I think it's probably near and dear to a lot of people, and that is the idea of being creative in business. Whether you work in corporate America and you harbor feelings of being able to be an entrepreneur, or you are in a creative business. I did an hour-long podcast this week about podcasting with advice for podcasters and people who want to be creative. And so I've kind of chopped that down to really be applicable to American business and corporate America and all of that. And I'm pretty excited about it. So that's coming up. And I think given the week that we've had politically and socially in this country, that changing the energy and thinking about something that's kind of fun is probably a really good idea for the last segment of this week's Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. So the question is, do you currently toil under the tyranny of corporate America? Do you yearn for a day when you can be creative, maybe even entrepreneurial? Well, you better pray you get fired. It might be the best thing that ever happened to you. Next. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcast radio show. For more of the podcast, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. For more of this show, visit gcnlive.com. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. Thanks once again to Hydrus for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast. Whatever you do, whether it is CrossFit, cycling, yoga, any kind of competitive sports, Hydrus will make a huge difference because it enables you to get hydrated really fast and stay hydrated throughout your workout. It helps you take it to the edge. HydrusPerformance.com. Join the Hydrus Performance Revolution. That's HydrusPerformance.com. H-Y-D-R-U-S. HydrusPerformance.com. And thanks again as well to Cairo Contracting for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast. New sponsor, summer's coming. We're going to have storms. And when we do, you could have exterior damage to your house. You know, I was thinking, what if it's your mother or your parents who are maybe getting a little older and they may not know that somebody coming to the door is just some fly-by-night? That's why you need a name that you know. Cairo Contracting, they do storm damage. They're Better Business Bureau accredited. They are storm damage specialists. 612-702-2357. 612-702-2357. Cairo Contracting. If you need the number, there's a banner at the top of the Bob Davis Podcast page, yellow and white, and a picture of a really nice roofing job that those guys did. The number's right there for you. All right, here's the fourth segment of this week's Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. You're hearing the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. For all the Bob Davis Podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. For more of this show, visit gcnlive.com. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. Did a long podcast this week with advice for podcasters, which basically said, don't take advice from radio or TV professionals on how to do a podcast. Just do what you want. And I had a great time talking about the creative impulse and breaking the rules with some advice, if you'll pardon the term, from my years in radio and glean from these documentaries about music recording, movies, and movie making that you can watch on Netflix. They're great. And I realized about halfway through the podcast that most of this information and most of this quote-unquote advice is useful for all business, not just the communications business. And the one thing that I've learned is rules were made to be broken. I watch a lot of these documentaries about musical artists on Netflix. You know, and after I've watched everything that you can watch on Netflix, note that I'm talking about Netflix and not broadcast television, because they wouldn't put any of these documentaries on broadcast television. I watched the Janis Joplin documentary, which is awesome. And I've watched, you know, the Tom Petty stuff. And I watched the one about the Eagles. A lot of people have watched that documentary about the Eagles. And Glenn Frey was talking about when they first got started, they were not very good musicians, and they went out to L.A., and they made an effort to start learning how to do, how to write songs and how to play. And he started talking about how they kind of got to the point where they learned how to write songs. And he said, listen to that thunder, I learned a lot from Jackson Browne about how to write songs, because I lived upstairs from Jackson Browne, and he would just bang away on the piano all day until he figured out how to write a song. And it took them, you know, I mean, they had three or four albums before they really figured out how to write a really good song. So it's an interesting perspective from someone who I considered to be really amazing, Glenn Frey, who just said, hey, I didn't know how to write a song. And most of those people don't. So if you're a podcaster and you say, I don't know how to be a podcaster, it doesn't matter. You know, do what you think that you need to do and do what is calling out to you. As soon as a business starts contracting, it starts trying to protect what it is and what it has been in an increasingly aggressive way, because the world for that industry is getting increasingly competitive. And it's not going to change. I don't care what they say. Well, we've changed that. We're not like that. And yes, you are, because that's how it is. And it will never change. You know, grocery store managers, you know, basically run the grocery store. They don't decide what's in there. The grocery store clerk puts things on the shelves and takes things off the shelves. That's what radio general managers do. So if you're a podcaster, forget about radio people. The last thing that you want is a critique of your work. I won't critique what people do in podcasting. I won't tell them how to do it. I won't tell them how to get their podcast syndicated. I won't tell them what kind of microphone to use. I won't tell them when to do it. I won't tell them the structure, because I don't know anything about it. I don't know what I'm doing. And I freely admit it. And I don't. I had to figure this stuff out by myself. One of my good friends, Kyle Sheely, and I've talked about this before, is my producer at KSTP. Said, you know, I was furious when I got fired from KSTP and I was trying to do podcasting. I didn't know what I was doing. And, you know, I was calling him up and yelling at him, and he just laughed at me. And he goes, Bob, if I can put a wrestling podcast up, you can figure this out. And I just hung up on him, and I went down to the Apple store, and I spent like the next 5 days at the Apple store. And yes, I did. I figured it out. I figured it out because Kyle made me. He didn't tell me how to do it. So if you're a podcaster, forget about all that. Here's what you do. Do whatever you want in spades. Don't listen to somebody who says, this is what you need to do. Because how do they know what to do? We don't know what to do. This digital media thing is not a mass media. It is only in its infancy. You know, things like Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and everything else, you're going to forget all about this in 10, 15 years. They're going to be gone, and something will be in its place. This is all brand new, and there are no rules. And anyone who tells you their rules, you know, I don't think they know what they're talking about. You know, I'll give you a couple examples. Well, I did give you some examples from filmmaking. Well, here's a great example from filmmaking. So one of the things I like to do is watch those director tracks on movies where the directors talk about what they're doing, because I think it's fascinating, because movies are amazing, because it takes so many people to make a movie. And directors, you know, have a certain approach to how they do things. And every one of them has a different approach. You know, all these rules about how you're supposed to direct and blah, 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 blah. Well, if you don't know anything about The Godfather, we're talking about the very first Godfather, which was a masterpiece. Francis Ford Coppola is, you know, truly a masterpiece, as far as I'm concerned, movie. When he made The Godfather, Paramount Studios, which was very much a top-down controlled company, thought The Godfather should be one of these mini-series type things, which was, you know, a generational movie. And as Coppola put it, they wanted hippies in it at the end. And what he did was he said, okay, yeah, sure. And he went out and started to make his own movie. And at every turn, he avoided the managers and the accountants from Paramount and tricked them. One of the things that he would do is they would come in, and he tells about how you know, he had to fire everyone because he knew that the accounts were coming in and they were going to fire everybody. So he fired everyone first, and then he rehired them the next day after they left. Another thing is, people don't know this, but George Lucas was editing that movie, and I think shooting and editing or something like that, that movie. And the famous scene in the hospital, you know, Coppola wanted to shoot it the way you see it, where the halls are empty and it builds the suspense for this attempted murder of the Godfather in the movie. And Paramount said, no, you can't do that because you don't have enough money. So Coppola was fit to be tied, because he was like, well, I have to shoot it this way, so I'm just going to do it, because they wouldn't buy more film. And Lucas said, don't worry, what we'll do is we'll just let it roll when the halls are empty, and then I'll cut it in later. So that's how those whole halls were set up. They would just let the tape roll after a take and, you know, for the required time. And then Lucas pieced that all together when he edited the movie. And I think that's fascinating because Coppola did all that in spite of the really intelligent guys who knew how to do everything, because the way movies were made up to that point, 1970, 1969, was they were all epic Westerns with, you know, they wanted a soundtrack, and they, you know, Coppola brought his father in to make the soundtrack because he didn't like what Paramount wanted to do. Why? Because he, along with Spielberg and a lot of these other people, Lucas, you know, the people that made Star Wars, they thought it was a joke. Everybody said, this is a terrible movie. And it was huge. You know, The Godfather was panned when it first came out, until people actually saw it and they said, oh my God, this is great. Everybody, Coppola left LA and slept on a friend's couch because he was so embarrassed that everyone hated the movie. And he got a call in San Francisco and somebody said, hey, you just won an Oscar. He didn't even know. So that's what I mean about creativity. You learn from these other people who were groundbreaking how to really be creative. This is not a fine art. You know, yeah, there are times when artists in the radio, on the radio, in television, whatever, and in podcasting, you know, rise to a fine art. And are we artists? I don't know. But, you know, I don't know that great artists are created by studying art. You know, I think that a lot of times they just have a gift. Sometimes it's an incredible gift, but I don't know that those people necessarily study art. You know, Jim Morrison studied film, but he was a musical artist and really had, you know, he hooked up with Mary Manzarek and started writing these crazy songs. I mean, he was at UCLA Film School. He made a film and everyone thought it was terrible. I mean, these are true stories about people. Janis Joplin went to San Francisco and started hanging out at just the right time in the place, and she could sing, but she didn't learn to sing until she cut Pearl. She wasn't really a great singer until then. And I think what happens is people in the record business, people in the radio business, people in the film business can get trapped in a time warp. I've been there. I've been trapped in that warp. And some people can't get out. You're lucky if you get fired because you're pushed out. These people think it's the 1970s or the 1980s or the early 90s. It's just like some of the political people that think that Ronald Reagan is going to come back at the next election. It's not going to happen because it's a different time with different needs and different things. And that kind of describes a lot of corporate America these days. You know, you got a lot of old thinkers and new things are coming. So I hope that advice is useful to you if you're thinking about, you know, striking out on your own, or if you have young adult kids who are getting ready to figure out what they're going to do in their life. And I guess I'd better get back to my own grindstone when it comes to my own creativity. So that's going to do it for this edition of the Bob Davis Podcast's radio show. For all the Bob Davis podcasts, visit the BobDavisPodcast.com. Back here at the same time, same station. Boop. This is the Bob Davis Podcast's radio show. Live from the studio once again, that is this week's Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show, episode 31, which airs at 4 p.m. on Sunday on The Patriot in Minneapolis and St. Paul. New affiliates as we get them. A couple of new features to the BobDavisPodcast.com I want to mention. I'm going to start doing a newsletter. Now, we need you to sign up for the newsletter through MailChimp, which is doable. If you just scroll past the picture of Mobile Podcast Command, you'll see the email sign up, newsletter sign up thing, and you click on that. That takes you to MailChimp, and you fill in that stuff. And once I get a list of people's emails, I can send you the newsletter, which is going to be pretty cool. It's just going to be a little bit, some of the content from the podcast, some of the stuff that's not in the podcast. It's going to be in a magazine format, so it's going to be a little different. And just sign up for the email newsletter, and I'll tell you more about that going forward. Thanks for listening on Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn, BlogTalkRadio.com, GCNLive.com, The Patriot in Minneapolis. Thanks for liking, sharing, favoriting, and following on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And as always, I really appreciate your contributions and donations for Mobile Podcast Command. We're getting ready to head out. I might do some storm chasing. I might do the EAA air show. I'm definitely going to go to Cleveland for the RNC, although I don't have credentials, but I think it's going to be more fun out in the street. And probably, if I can get my tickets, Burning Man. So a lot going on with Mobile Podcast Command. I'll tell you about that at some point in the future here, but we are out of time. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts. Podcast 514, the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show.